You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Japan's system to forecast radiation threats worked perfectly from the moment its nuclear crisis began. As government officials opened a vent to release radioactivity into the air, the system forecast that an elementary school would be directly in the path of the cloud. But officials decided not to act on the prediction. The school, just over 10 kilometers from the Fukushima plant, was not cleared out. In fact, it was turned into a temporary evacuation center. Such negligence or even criminality on the part of Japanese government officials raises questions about the handling of the crisis. It also casts doubt on the reliability of information provided by those same officials. Gordon Edwards is president of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility, and he has joined us on the phone from Montreal. Hello, Gordon.
Hello, Sean. How are you?
Good, thank you. The last time we talked in March, you told us that there was concern about the stability of the reactor core in one of the Fukushima plants. What's happening at those reactors now?
Well, we now know that the three reactor cores all melted down virtually completely, and this means that the temperature has exceeded 2,800 degrees Celsius, which is the melting point of the uranium fuel. It also means that the radioactive materials released into the atmosphere were a lot greater than previously thought. The difficulty is that many of these radioactive materials which are given off are easy to measure, but most of them are very hard to measure because they don't give off what's called penetrating radiation. They don't give off gamma radiation. So the ones that they reported on were only the ones that are giving off gamma radiation, and they underestimated by quite a bit the emissions from the reactor.
So what does that mean exactly in terms of the, you talk about the penetrating radiation. So there's a non-penetrating radiation type of...
Yeah. There's actually some of the most dangerous radioactive materials known. I prefer to use the word radioactivity rather than radiation because we have experience with different types of radiation. For example, a heat lamp gives off heat radiation, right? But when you turn off the heat lamp, it's gone. There's no more heat being generated, right? Radioactivity is quite different. Radioactivity is, these are actually material particles, materials. Think of chemicals, think of toxic chemicals, except that the atoms themselves are unstable. So that these materials, the atoms are disintegrating or exploding, and they're giving off both penetrating and non-penetrating radiation. Now, what does this mean? Well, the penetrating radiation is like an invisible X-ray that goes right through you, right? That's the gamma radiation. But the alpha and beta radiation is more like flying pieces of shrapnel at the subatomic level. So that what happens is that the penetrating radiation affects you from the outside. It can damage your cells from the outside because it goes right through your body. Whereas the non-penetrating radiation, it's when it gets in the food and gets into your body, that's where it does its most damage. And the damage done by these internal emitters, as they're called, ultimately can be far greater than the damage done by the penetrating radiation. In fact, alpha radiation, which is the least penetrating radiation, is about 20 times more damaging per unit of exposure than the penetrating radiation. So it's getting it into the food, getting it into the milk, and getting it into the human body that really is the problem there.
What do we know about the amount of radiation that the Japanese public has been exposed to?
Well, we still are playing a guessing game. First of all, there have been no definitive figures given as to the total amount of radioactive material emitted. But a professor of nuclear medicine at Tokyo University recently testified to the Japanese parliament, and he said that according to their calculations, because they didn't have absolutely reliable figures from TEPCO, the company, they figured that there was at least 39 times more radioactive material given off from these reactors during the accident than was given off by the Hiroshima bomb, for example, or the Nagasaki bomb either. The reason for this is that in an atomic bomb, uranium atoms are split, and the radioactive fallout is the same kind of materials that comes from the nuclear reactor, which also depends upon splitting uranium atoms, right? So it's the same kind of stuff that comes out, but in the case of a nuclear reactor, the atoms are splitting for years, and so there's a much greater accumulation of this radioactive stuff. Generally speaking, there's 100 to 1,000 times more radioactive material inside a nuclear reactor than would be produced by the explosion of an atomic bomb. So this gentleman was recently testifying, and he said he was really angry at the reassurances that were being given by the Japanese government saying that everything is safe. One can understand, you know, the instinct of a politician is to try to reassure people. You want people to be happy. You want people to be supporting you. And so giving them good news is always better than giving them bad news. The difficulty is that I don't think the politicians themselves properly understood what was going on, because they were getting their information from TEPCO, the plant that owns the company that owns the plant, and also from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in Japan, which shares the same mentality really as the people in the industry. Basically, they're all very pro-nuclear, and they're all physicists and engineers. They're not biomedical people, so their first concern is not so much, they don't know that much about how radiation behaves inside the body. They're more concerned about the machinery, trying to get the releases stopped, trying to get the machinery fixed.
Well, you mentioned the 39 times more radiation than the Hiroshima bomb. It's hard to conceive.
Well, it is hard to conceive. It really is virtually inconceivable. People have no idea of the enormous quantities of radioactive material which is created inside a nuclear reactor. We have about 100 tons of uranium in there as fuel. And the atoms of uranium, as they split, what happens is, if you think about hundreds of atoms, think about them as being like ball bearings or something, okay? Now imagine that they're being split by some kind of giant chopper that's just chopping these atoms into pieces. Well, every little piece becomes radioactive garbage. Every little piece. You know, when you talk about iodine-131, that's a piece of a uranium atom. When you talk about cesium-137, that's another piece of a uranium atom. And there are hundreds of these pieces, not just four or five or six. Here in Canada, they've been measuring four of them. Well, there's at least a couple of hundred that are coming across the Pacific Ocean and which are being released from that plant. So they only report the ones which are easy to measure, but there's lots of others. And each one of these radioactive materials, which are the broken pieces of the uranium atoms, they all have different chemical pathways through the body, different chemical pathways through the air. Some of them are gases. Some of them are metals. They all have different characteristics. Iodine-131, when it goes into the body, concentrates in the thyroid gland, because that's what the body does with non-radioactive iodine. And so the body cannot discriminate between radioactive and non-radioactive. So it puts the iodine in the thyroid gland, because that's where all iodine goes in the body. And there it can cause damage, so that, for example, we now know that 5,000 children, according to the World Health Organization, in Belarus had to have their thyroid glands surgically removed because of thyroid cancers that developed about 5 to 10 years after the Chernobyl accident, which took place more than 20 years ago. So these damages which are done today, the damage is being done today, but the actual consequences in terms of ill health may not show up for many, many years.
Some of the radioactive particles which have been released have concentrated in food sources. Last month, beef was recalled in Japan. What is the situation there in terms of food contamination?
Well, it's serious. They've sold, unfortunately, and it's a great embarrassment to the Japanese government and a great source of alarm to the people, that quite a lot of beef from that area was, in fact, sold and eaten by Japanese families, even though the levels of radiation, the levels of cesium contamination in the meat is way higher than what would be permitted. In fact, they sampled 10 cattle from this one particular herd, and all 10 of them had excessive levels of cesium-137. Cesium-137 is a radioactive material which goes to the meat, and therefore it's easily consumed by people who eat the meat, And it has a half-life of about 30 years. What that means, what the half-life means, is that the atoms of a radioactive material, the thing that makes the radioactive material dangerous is that the atoms are literally exploding. Each explosion of an atom is called a disintegration, and they talk about disintegrations per second. So what happens is that when you ingest this material into your body, if those explosions take place inside your body, they damage the cells of your body. Now, in most cases, those cells will simply be rejected by the body and replaced by healthy cells, and it won't do any great harm. But in a few cases, those damaged cells are able to reproduce and turn into cancers. And so they have consistently found that low doses, even low doses of radiation exposure, exposure to these radioactive materials, will produce an increase in cancer. Not everybody's going to get cancer who eats this food, but there is an increased incidence of cancer among those people. And, of course, why should you be doing this? Obviously, you'd rather not. So what they're now doing in Japan is they're backtracking quickly, and they've also found high levels of radioactive material in the green tea, which is almost a religious symbol in Japan. You know, green tea is one of the healthiest things that you can have, according to the Japanese, and to find that it's contaminated with radiation to an unacceptable degree is very shocking. So they're now doing a lot of measurements of the food, and they are trying to set standards for how much radiation is permissible in the food. But, you know, when it comes right down to it, if you had your choice, the permissible level would be zero, because in nature these things don't exist. The actual natural background level of iodine-131 is really zero. There isn't any such thing. It's created by the nuclear reactor process.
You mentioned Belarus, and that brings to mind the Chernobyl case and the Chernobyl disaster. I know around the now defunct plant in Chernobyl, there's a kind of, I don't know, do they call it a black zone or a zone where people don't travel or nothing is produced anymore. Do you see the same thing happening in Fukushima?
Well, yes, there is. It is illegal, in fact, to enter the evacuation zone unless you have special permission, of course. So they do have a similar law, but they're hoping that it will be temporary. They're trying right now to undertake decontamination, and that's not an easy thing to do. It's very, very difficult. A group of scientists from Tokyo University released a report recently, reporting that 96% of the radioactive cesium is retained in the first 5 centimeters of the soil of a rice field, a rice paddy field. So the surface layer of 3 centimeters contained 88%. So what they want to do is they actually want to scrape up this radioactively contaminated soil, but then they get large quantities of what you call radioactive sludge, and they don't know what to do with that. Also, they have been decontaminating the water supply by purifying the water, removing the radiation as much as possible. But then they get large quantities of radioactively contaminated material, which they're not allowed to dispose of. So it's really a growing problem in Japan. They're getting more and more kind of, you might say, depots, and they cover them oftentimes with orange plastic. So you can see these fields with large chunks of area covered with orange plastic sheeting, which is radioactive material that they don't know what to do with. They're going to have to figure out where to put that stuff, how to safeguard it, because they can't just dump it back in the environment, obviously.
You alluded a little earlier to some of the radioactive particles that have reached here in Canada. How extensive do you think that fallout is here and in other parts of the world outside of Japan?
Oh, it's quite widespread. Obviously, it thins out as it goes across the Pacific Ocean, but most of it is headed our way, you know. Luckily for the Japanese people, most of the wind blowing at the time of the accident and afterwards was blowing across the Pacific Ocean, so blowing it really right to North America. Now, we even from Chernobyl, we know that the Inuit in northern Canada received significantly increased levels of cesium in their bodies as a result of contamination from Chernobyl of the caribou. You know, the Inuit love caribou meat. In fact, they traditionally, that was one of their main sources of meat. And the caribou eat lichen, which grows right in the open. And the lichen is very, very good at concentrating radioactive fallout, radioactive dust. And so the lichen has been collecting this radioactive cesium, which has a long half-life, and so it's there for decades once it gets into the lichen or into the soil. And the caribou eat that, and it concentrates again by many, many times in the caribou meat. And then when the Inuit eat quite a bit of caribou meat, it concentrates again. So it's more concentrated in the lichen. Put it this way, whatever you measure in the air, it's much more concentrated in the rain. And then whatever you measure in the rain, it's much more concentrated than that in the lichen. And then whatever you measure in the lichen, it's more concentrated than that in the caribou, and finally more concentrated than that in the humans. So you have this reconcentration going on. There's the dilution due to physical factors, just spreading out and so on, but then there's the reconcentration due to the action of living things, because that's what living things do.
Well, we've been focusing on the Japanese nuclear industry. Canada, of course, has a large stake in that industry. We have CANDU reactors, then the uranium production and export industry that we have as well. Given what's happened at Fukushima, what can we expect to see going forward with regard to the Canadian nuclear industry?
Well, that's, of course, a question that a lot of people are asking. Even if you go back 10 years ago, they've been talking for a long time about some kind of nuclear renaissance with a rebirth and a revitalization of the nuclear industry, which hasn't sold a new reactor in North America for 30 years. You know, there was a 30-year period where there was no sales at all. So there was a lot of hope on the part of the nuclear industry that they would be able to sell thousands of these nuclear reactors around the world, including North America and Europe. Well, this just hasn't happened. Even before the Fukushima disaster, this wasn't getting off the ground. Part of the reason was because of the expense of the technology. Part of the reason is because they still haven't solved the fundamental problems. For example, even the latest reactors that are built can still have the same kind of accident that we saw at Fukushima. These probabilities have been reduced, perhaps, but they certainly haven't been eliminated. And so for all these reasons, the nuclear renaissance has been sputtering along. Now, with the sudden shock of Fukushima, Germany has reiterated its determination to phase out nuclear power completely by the year 2022. And they have like 17 nuclear reactors, which is almost the same number that Canada has. And they're going to switch completely to renewable energy. The same thing has been decided in Italy. They're not going to resume nuclear at all. They've decided to phase it out completely. And even Japan is making very strong pronouncements that they're not going to pursue nuclear, that this was a big mistake. They shouldn't have done it in the first place. And there's a lot of anger in Japan among the citizenry about the fact that they feel that they've been lied to. They feel that they were led to believe that such accidents as we've witnessed here were simply impossible, that, you know, that these things simply could not happen. The same kind of reassurances we're getting now in Canada and in North America. And yet, it's important to realize that south of the border, there are no less than 43 nuclear reactors down there, which have exactly the same design as the Fukushima reactors. It's called the General Electric Mark I design. It's the same design. And all that happened, again, this is a hard thing for people to understand, all that happened at Fukushima was that the tsunami knocked out the power supply. It didn't really damage the reactors. It knocked out the power supply. And when you don't have power, you cannot run the pumps. And if you cannot run the pumps, and this is the amazing thing, nuclear reactors simply cannot be shut off 100%. They can only be shut off to a certain extent. When you shut off a reactor completely, as soon as you shut it down, it continues to generate 7% of full power heat, and that heat that's being generated will drive the temperature higher and higher and higher and higher until it finally melts at 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit or 2,800 degrees Celsius. So what is it? What is it that's producing all that heat? How come we can't turn it off? The answer is it's the radioactivity. There's so much radioactivity in the core of the reactor that it alone, all by itself, is producing this heat, and you cannot turn it off. There's no way of turning it off. So unless you can run those pumps and remove that heat, you're going to have a disaster. And that's what happened at Fukushima. All the damage you see visibly to the reactor and all the releases that took place were all self-inflicted injuries caused by the reactor to itself. The explosions, the hydrogen gas explosions, the melting, all of that was caused by the radioactivity in the core of the reactor and nothing else.
Well, Gordon, thanks for joining us and illuminating this complex and difficult topic.
Okay, and I'd just like to conclude by saying, avoid saying radiation and start saying radioactivity, because radioactivity, understanding radioactivity is the key, and radiation is a bit of a red herring because it leads you off in the wrong direction.
Okay, we'll start doing that. All right. I've been speaking with Gordon Edwards. He is president of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility. You can learn more about the Fukushima disaster at their website. That site can be found at ccnr.org.